Matthew 24, where Christ is alerting his men to the very difficult job he's sending them out to do. And he's as much saying, you know, this isn't going to be a lot of fun, guys. You're just going to work, and you're going to work hard. It's not always going to look good. Sometimes it's going to look particularly bad. And what I want you to do is just keep on task. And so he said, you know, don't be deceived. Don't be distracted. Just stay on task, and you'll do very well. The question then comes, how do I do that? It's a legitimate thing to ask. And I've said this again and again, and we bounced around it at Sunday school this morning. The fact is, we do not travel an easy path. And the Lord never taught us anything to suggest that that would be the case. Now, we're going to a place that is just incredibly pleasant. I quote the Apostle Paul. He said, "Eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him." It is going to be one delightful eternity. I am just so looking forward to it. Those of you who enjoy a good cup of coffee, there's nobody, Dan, who makes a better coffee, cup of coffee than the Jews. When we traveled in Israel, and the way they serve it, they come to the breakfast table, they got two pitchers. They got a pitcher of hot milk and a pitcher of hot coffee. And they pour in your cup, equal measures. And I tell you, it is just wonderful coffee. Just wonderful. And I think about eternity, and even before, you know, we got 1,000 years before we get to eternity, in the millennium, before the new heavens and the new earth. And I think of that millennium and the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. And incidentally, right now, you're being prepared to serve the Lord during that period of time. And, you know, Les, it's not on to be unexpected that there will be logs to scale during the millennium. They'll be building. And we'll have incredible products. And somehow they're going to have to skid those logs off the mountain. There'll be mechanic work to do. There'll be building to do. But the issue is, I don't think we do too much hands-on stuff. I think we are the administrators, because it says we rule and reign with him. So we take all of this experience that we've gathered in this life, and he will equip us to properly administrate these things. That's a little frightening to me, because I'm not much of an administrator. But I don't think that much about that, because it's a little bit threatening to me. What do I think about? I think about meeting Brian on the west side of the new temple, because that's where the food court is. And, oh, fresh coffee and bagels, or croissants, or things like that. The bread in Israel is fascinating. Baguettes. I've never had a baguette like I had when we were in Israel. Do you remember baguettes? Oh, the pocket bread. We had pocket bread in Jericho. I won't tell you what we put in the pocket. I will, too, tell you what we put in the pocket. Pickled mashed potatoes. And chickpeas. I don't think I'll have to eat that in the millennium if I don't want to. I can have coffee and a baguette with Brian. I think about sitting there with my mother. What? Eternity. The millennium. What a fascinating thing. And that's our hope. And Paul tells us in Romans chapter 8 that that's what keeps us going. And he also says, if you have a son like Ethan, just rejoice. Easton. All right. He tells us, if in this life alone we have hope, we are of all men most to be pitied. Now, how else can you interpret that than to say, there ain't much hope here? It's just going to be tough. And so the question is, how do I move through that toughness? Am I left to figure this out on my own? And I say, indeed you are not. And that is one of the primary purposes of the Psalms, to teach us how to work our way through these days. And I made the point last week that the Psalms are not purely devotional. They are instructive. They are not just an ointment. They are a curative. They teach us to go through these times. We mentioned in Sunday school this morning that the Lord intentionally sent the disciples into a great storm on the Sea of Galilee. Terrible storm. They thought they were going to die. The Lord did that intentionally. And he let the storm billow until the guys were persuaded that they were going to die. And their confrontation with the Lord was, carest thou not that we perish? And he was, folks, asleep in the back of the boat. And there's going to be times when you think the Lord's just asleep. Don't you care that I perish? You understand what I'm carrying? Do you know that you can talk to him like that? He didn't rebuke the disciples. He rebuked the storm. And he said, guys, you got to trust me. And we need to trust him. So in this psalm, we're going to learn how to do that. Now, I've been around Charlotte long enough. It's over 51 years. Because it took me 3 years to persuade her to marry me. So that was quite a campaign. Wasn't an easy one. She would look at this psalmist. You know what she'd say? She'd say, what a crybaby. That's what she would say. Now, don't you say that. And that was just a gentle rebuke for Charlotte for saying it. Okay, she didn't say it, but she would. It is okay to bellyache and complain. But notice with me, please, verse 1. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry or my complaint, what does it say? Come unto thee. Who ought to be the first party to our complaint? God. We need to work on that. When things are incredibly difficult, or even just a little difficult, talk to God about it. He ought to be the first party to our complaint. And that's what we learn out of that first verse. Very, very important. Let my cry come unto thee. We like to think that we can be an encouragement and a help to others, but we can kind of put an arm around them and we can say, you know, you just got to buck up here. I really feel bad, but sympathy only goes so far. And the psalmist is saying, get yourself a relationship with God where you can talk with him about these issues. And, you know, you can do it all day through the day. You know, I earned a living for a long time just burning welding rod. It's a mindless job, you know. And all the time you can talk to the Lord, you know. Now, I know that all of you don't do mindless jobs. But there's just a lot of time in the day. And we need to understand that prayer, does that mean that I run off to the closet and shut the door and I'm the only one there? There are those times. But prayer is something that a relationship we have with God that is instant. And we can talk with Him any place at any time. And you know, that's a conversation that we hold in our hearts with God. Now, the second thing we have here is in verse 2, and we're just going to go through verse 11 tonight. Hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in trouble. That's an interesting statement. The day when I'm in trouble. We are going to have days of trouble. And there are two things that stand out to me in this second verse. The first thing he says, hide not thy face from me in the day of my trouble. Now, as you read the Psalms, think through them. The psalmist has found a way to express his thought. And so you need to answer this question, what is his thought? What is he saying here? Hide not thy face from me in the day of my trouble. Do you remember when Esther was persuaded by her cousin to confront the king about the condition of the Jewish people? And she said, yeah, I've not been called to see him, and if he doesn't hold up his scepter, I'm dead meat. He's probably thinking about his previous wife, what happened to her. And you see, she didn't have the freedom to come into his presence. You have the freedom to come into God's presence. Now, have you thought that through? What a remarkable thing that is, that his ear is open to you in your trouble. And the point of this is, let me see my trouble in the light of your presence. What a difference that. Now, and you guys practice this. I hear you practice it. You rejoice and delight in the sovereignty of God. And as we talk about the difficulties we face, whether they be career or home or community or political, whatever, we generally resolve those things very quickly by saying, God is still in heaven. What in the world do we mean when we say God is still in heaven? We're saying He is cognizant of this and He has the power to resolve it. And understand, as we look at our troubles, folks, that is central to it, for us to come to Him in that kind of confidence that you are fully aware of what I'm going through. Help me to see my trouble in the light of your presence and find comfort in that. And there is comfort in that. That's not like the comfort you get from mom or dad or a best friend, because that mom or dad or best friend won't be there always. You know, they have to go to work. They have to go buy groceries. And you're alone, and all of a sudden that trouble comes flowing upon you again. Do I have to wait until I can call my best friend to find resolution to this? Or can I call my best friend in heaven and find resolution immediately? And what does that mean? It means trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. God expects us to live that way, trusting in Him. So the first thing the psalmist says is, let me view my trial in the light of your presence. Now, notice, secondly, he says, in the day when I call, answer me. You see the word? Speedily. I need a solution here right away. Okay? Well, again, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. He will. You know, we look at the Old Testament stories, and we related to Elijah's frustration after such a victory with the prophets of Baal, and then Jezebel threatened him, and he thought, I'm a dead man, and he ran away to hide. But when he ran away to hide, who met him? God. And what did God do? He fed him, took care of him. And God will do that for you. Trust him. He will do that. And I can pull a little here. Folks, I've been young, and now I'm old. But I've never seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. Charlotte and I have watched God take care of us for 51 years. And I mean to tell you, we went through some situations that we sure would have preferred not to go through. But God has safely brought us through them all. He answers us. Practical measures in my trouble. And let me say this, sovereignty does not eliminate personal responsibility. It's not that we get to be inactive. The way I've chosen to illustrate that is when the Philistines came, God gave David instructions for battle. He didn't say, sit still and see the salvation of the Lord, although there were times when he did say that to his men. He chose to do it that way. But in most of the occasions with David, he told them, charge him from the front, or wait till you hear the sound of him coming, and then go around and come in on his two flanks. God gave him instructions. And God will give us instructions. So how do we listen to him? First, we listen to his word. You need to listen to his word. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he'll direct your paths. And that's why we just need to be in this book all the time. We need to see, what did Isaiah do when he was in trouble? What did Hezekiah do when he was in great trouble? What did Abraham do when he was in trouble? We need to see those things and understand them. These are not stories for our entertainment. These are stories for our instruction that teach us how to live. And I don't know how to encourage you in this matter other than to say it works. And God would bring to your mind the things that he has taught you and carry you successfully through these periods of time and these troubles. And we can trust him for that. Okay, hide not thy face from me. Let me see my problem in the light of your presence, and then answer me and show me what to do. And we quoted Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 for that. Now, notice in verse 3, he begins to use some similes. And he's talking here about the degree of the issue that he faces. In verse 3, he says, my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned as a hearth. That is what we call a simile. In other words, I'm experiencing something that is reflective or similar to this situation. My life is like a fire. It's transient as smoke. But we begin to think, what does God care about me? I'm just nobody. You know? And my life could be snuffed out just like that. God does care. That's one of the things that we battle with when we come into trouble. We begin to think, I'm nobody and God doesn't care. And he says that my bones are burned as a hearth. He says, my days and strength are just totally consumed. They're like the ashes in the pit of an old fire. You ever think nobody has it as tough as you do? We think that. We think of all the people in the world, we got it the worst. And so why are we confronted by a crybaby here? Because, and we don't like this statement, but it's what we often use, it's tough all over. And it is. And it's okay to observe that and look at that. We're not supposed to. You ever read Zig Ziglar stuff? You should do that. It's encouraging stuff to read. He's a believer, and he's one of these positive thinkers, and it's fun to read him. His best book that he wrote, from my point of view, is The Confessions of a Happy Christian. And it's something you can read one chapter at a time and just delight. It just kind of gets your focus where it belongs. And we need to understand that life gets tough and God takes us through it. In verse 4, his simile is grass. By reason of thy voice and my groaning, verse 4, my heart is smitten and withered like grass so that I forget to eat my bread. And again, understand, he's talking about the degree of his trial. And he's saying, my heart is smitten, and I'm withered like grass. You notice how fast our grass dries up in Montana? You know, we've had a real nice rainy June, and our lawns have done well. But it's the 19th of July, and if you're not watering your lawn, it is turning to sticks and stones already. It just withers right up. And the psalmist is saying, I've just withered up. My life has become dormant, you know. Parched and dormant like grass, to the point that I forget to eat. You know, I read that, and you know what I see? A good diet plan. That's the way to lose weight. Have some real trouble. Can I talk to you about one of my troubles? Charlotte and I weren't very far into the ministry. I was the associate pastor in a church on the north side of Des Moines, Iowa. And I was brought into that position around January. And it's a church that Charlotte and I had gone to through our courting years. I had been the senior high Sunday school teacher for about 2 years. And they'd called a new pastor. And at that particular time, Charlotte and I were filling pulpit down in Grand River, Iowa. And it was only a morning service and Sunday evening. We still went to church there at that church. And one Sunday evening, the new pastor asked me if I would consider being his associate pastor. Not doing anything else. Might as well do that. I'm tired of welding, you know. So it was the end of my senior year. So I worked part-time from about February through May. College graduate early, you know, so May. And I'm just into that full-time position. And about the end of June or July, the pastor invites me over into his backyard on a Friday afternoon for a Coke. And he starts on me with a story that I wouldn't believe. There's a conflict come between he and the deacons, and it's just irresolvable, and things are just blowing up. I had no idea. I was just sailing through, happy camper. And I said, "You're kidding." And he was telling me how evil these five deacons were. Well, I'd known those men for 3 years. And I loved and admired him. I said, "You mind if I go talk to those guys?" He says, "You've got my blessing." That was about 4 o'clock Friday afternoon. I called on all five deacons. And I talked to them about that situation. And I came back 10 o'clock that night, knocked on the pastor's door, and he invited me in, and we sat down at the dining room table, and I looked across at him, and I said, "I think this situation can be resolved." Now, that's exactly what I did and what I said. When he got angry, it started down here. He was bald-headed, and the flush came up and went all over the way over his head. And that started. And he looked at me, and he said, "You, Judas." And those were the last words he spoke to me. And the deacons got together in a program, and they fired him. I'm telling you this because the psalmist said, "I forgot to eat." I lost 40 pounds in the next 6 to 7 weeks. I was skin and bone. I couldn't even eat. That was my introduction to the ministry. Listen, God puts us in ugly positions now and again. I got to finish that story, okay? And the point is, we need to learn to walk through these things with God. And I said to you earlier, God has taught us to do that. And so I come to you and I say to you, you can do this. And whether it's an issue, again, in your home, in your family, in your career, in your job, whatever, you can do it. And it's not unusual to have to. And so as we read through the Psalms, we get instruction on how to do this. Lord, help me look at this in your presence. Give me an answer. Tell me what to do. Deacons came to me and said, "Dave, please don't leave us. Stick by us through this." So, and he was fired, but he couldn't. They couldn't get him out for 6 weeks. In 6 weeks, I had to work with him, and he wouldn't talk with me. You know, it was interesting. Do you believe that happens in a church? Isn't that incredible? That's another thing. It happened in our church? Well, they did. Well, as time went along, we called a new pastor, and he came. And he was aware of what had happened before he came. He said to me, he said, "I'm afraid of you." Why would you be afraid of me, you know? But I saw the handwriting on the wall, and we started getting all kinds of invitations to Canada and other churches. I think probably he was out there telling, get this guy, to get rid of me. I don't know. Ended up in a little church up in northeastern Wisconsin. And been there about a year or so. And I learned that this pastor who had been fired was now pastoring in a church that was 120 miles from our door up in Escanaba, Michigan. And in his defense, he had a heart issue. WPW, Wolf, Parkinson, and White. I remember that like it was yesterday. And he would, Saturday night, his wife would call me, say, "Pastor's in the hospital. You got to preach in the morning." You know, he'd have a heart issue. And this sweet little girl over here, she thinks it was intentional. She said he could cause it anytime he wanted. Didn't you? Yep. Okay. Well, anyway, he's up in that hospital, and he's dying. and I heard about it. And I thought, should I go see him? I hadn't talked to him since that day he said, "You Judas." And I loved him. So I called his wife. And I said, "Would your husband welcome a call from me?" She said, "Yes." I remember Melissa was just a little baby yet. And we packed her up in the car and we drove up to Escanaba. And it's an old Catholic hospital, you know, about four stories high, brick and rock, that kind of thing, you know. And I'm driving around it, and I'm thinking, I don't have to go in. I don't have to go in. But I stopped, and I left Charlotte and Melissa in the car, and I walked in there, and I got his room number, and I went up. It was about on the third floor. And I remember I was walking down the hallway, and I looked back this way, and there was a guy sitting on the bed facing away from me like this, and a nurse was standing here talking to him, and she said, "Are you looking for somebody?" I said, "Yeah," I used his name. I said, "I'm looking for..." "Oh, this is him right here. Come on in." I gotta go in. And I walked in, and he stood up and turned around and saw me. And he held out his arms, and he gave me a hug. And he said, "Dave, I've had a lot of associate pastors, but you're the best one I ever had." I think his heart problem erased his memory. I tried to love him, but what a deal. What am I saying? The psalmist talks about us to us about the real events of life. And we have to walk through those things. And we want to learn to walk through them in a godly, Christ-honoring way. And the Psalms will teach us how to do that. Our time is gone, but I want you to look at verse 6 and 7. "I'm like a pelican in the wilderness. I'm like an owl in the desert. I watch and am as a sparrow. I am alone upon the housetop." Here is another characteristic of the problems you face. You will always, always feel entirely alone. There is no getting around that. And I think Proverbs 14:10. Go over there with me. We're just a little ways from that. Proverbs 14:10. "The heart knoweth its own bitterness, and a stranger doth not intermeddle with his joy." What it's saying is, we're just alone in these things. And that's okay. Because when I'm alone, the one I trust in is God. And you're going to feel that loneliness. Let me say these things and then I'll finish. These are the typical experiences of God's children. These are typical. They're not unusual. They're not abnormal. They are normal. Don't quit and learn to walk through them. Don't look for easy ways. Just learn to be faithful. How many of you read Louis L'Amour? Oh, you do. Okay. I'm enjoying Louis L'Amour. You like Louis L'Amour, Easton? You would. Have your mom read Louis L'Amour to you. You'll love it. He has some interesting, and he hits this in most of his books that he writes. In one of the books that I just read, this Western hero is making this statement, until you have been beaten thoroughly three times, you're not a man. And that's an interesting statement, folks. It takes a beating to grow up. And we take it one way or another. Acquainted with R.G. Letourneau, one of the most wealthy businessmen in America years ago. He is the manufacturer of Letourneau earth-moving equipment. It's made in Springfield, Illinois, or Peru, Illinois. Maybe Peru, Illinois. It might be manufactured some other place. He wrote the book, God Owns My Business. He went bankrupt three times on his way to becoming a godly businessman. Do you know Henry Kaiser? He built an automobile, but he's not known for that. He is the one who is behind the Liberty ships in World War II. He was turning out ships, I think to the tune of five or six a day. Can you imagine that? These were the ships that helped us win World War II. And he organized and brought all that together and had shipyards all over. But Henry Kaiser had more failures than successes. Interesting guy. Interesting guy. Listen to the psalmist. We're going to walk through days of trial and days of hardship and days of pain. They aren't to be avoided. They are to be walked through, learned from, and in it we build a relationship with our God. And it is a wonderful thing. And well, you just need to get the Bible reading habit and the daily keep right at it. Because that's where your encouragement will be. Not that we as brothers and sisters can't be an encouragement to one another. I'm not saying that that doesn't exist. But the ultimate encouragement that you need is the encouragement you get from God. And you need to learn how to talk to Him as the psalmist talked to Him. That's why it's here. This is a pattern for us. And you need to learn to talk with God about this. Well, I just think that this is incredibly important information. I really do. It is incredibly simple. You know, trust the Lord. Well, how do I do that? Well, you talk to Him. You look at things from His perspective, in His presence, and you let Him, by His Word, direct you through it. It is that simple. But in that simplicity, you will bear a lot of hurt and a lot of hardship. You ever heard the statement, if it's easy, anybody could do it? Yeah. Well, you're not anybody. You're God's children. Let's pray. Father, thank You for this day. And thank You for the time in Your Word. Help us to be instructed by it and grow through it. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.